Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf lamed ches. We're here with the big daf today of Bishul Akum. We still have a little bit left to go in terms of finishing up from yesterday's daf on lamed zayin amid beis, and then we start today the big sugya of Bishul Akum. So first and foremost, let's finish up. Yossi ben Yoezer Ishtreda had three leniencies in the Mishnayos and Adio. So we discussed at length yesterday the first and the second one. We were discussing the third one. So the Gemara tried to give some sort of hesber, some explanation of what the third kula was. The way it was presented, even in the Mishnah, didn't sound like a kula. It sounded like when you touch a body, you become tame, which the Gemara itself pointed out is problematic for two reasons. Number one, it's not a kula; that's a chumra. Number two, we don't need Yosef ben Yoezer. That's a pasuk in Chumash that when you touch a dead body, you become tame. So the Gemara yesterday concluded that one possibility in terms of what he meant is the following. We know the halacha is that if I touch a dead body, I become tummy for 7 days. 7 days meaning I need a 7-day tahara process, including the para aduma. If while I'm touching the body, somebody else touches me, he also becomes tummy for 7 days, as if he touched the body himself. I become like a conductor of the tumma. Right? If he touches me after I let go of the body, so then he's tummy, but he's only tummy for 1 day. But if he's touching me while I'm touching the dead body, so he's tummy for 7 days. That's called what's called tumas chiburin. There was a gzeira derabanan that even after I detach myself from the body, even after I'm no longer touching the body, if he touches me, he's coming for 7 days. That's a gzeira derabanan. And what Yossi ben Yoezer Ishtreda did is he lifted that gzeira. Okay, so that's one possibility, and that's what we said yesterday.
He lifted the gzeira on the non-chiburim?
On the non-chiburim, correct. He lifted the gzeira on the non-chiburim, which makes it, he brought it back to the one-day tumah, and that's it.
But okay. Chiburim, he didn't.
Well, that's right, because that's not a gzeira, that's the dendar raisa. Correct, correct.
When was the gzeira put in motion?
I don't know, right? It must have happened sometime prior to Yossi ben Yoezer, but I can't tell you specifically when. I'm not sure. I don't know. V'hanefesh anagati tamin ha'aretz ha'ketz ha'kamichurin k'chan shalom b'chiborin. Okay. Amar lehu Rava. This is where we left off yesterday in the Gemara. We're on Lamed Zayin Amid Beis, and it's about 15 lines from the bottom of the page. The first word in the line is b'chiborin, and then it's the last three words in the line. Amar lehu Rava. Lava min lehu lo titlu be buki srike b'Rav Nachman. Don't hang empty jugs by Rav Nachman. It's an expression. It means, I don't think Rav Nachman ever said that. Don't say that about Rav Nachman. Hacham Rav Nachman. Something to Mabrishos HaRabim Hitalahen. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the heter was. So this is now the second possible explanation of what Rav Yossi ben Yoezer Ishtreda did when he lifted the band. What band did he lift? So you know what he said? He said the following, that if you have a questionable case of Tumah in a public domain, he says it's mutter. The Gemara says what? That's not a gzera derabanan. V'ahilchasa misota gamrin an law. That's a halach l'moshe misinai. Ma'asota rishos yachid ap tumah rishos yachid, because sota is a prototype of safik tumah. Now, mind you, by the way, that sota is tumah and our classic discussion of tumah is two separate types of tumah. In the case of sota, something happened in the room, but obviously we're talking about a possible impropriety of extramarital relationship. So, but still, the Torah uses the terminology of tumah. So, consequently, by sota, what we mean to say is like this: we don't know what happened, and they were alone together in the room. So that's suffik tumah brishus hayachid, and we know that the moment they emerged from that room, again with all the requirements of she was warned and she was told not to seclude herself with that man. But once she walks out of that room, regardless of what happened, she's a sota. She's usar. She cannot be with her husband. So we take that paradigm and we move it to the world of tumah, where if there's a questionable case of tumah in a private area, so safik tumah brishos hayachid is tummy. If it happens in a public area, safik tumah brishos harabim is tahor. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Yossi ben Yoezer is the one who made this heter. He didn't make the heter. This heter existed already. It's part of the halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Hamar Rav Yochanan halacha vein marin kain. V'asiyu v'ori le'uruye. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what happens? It's like this. Correct. It is halacha Moshe Mitzinai. But it's quoted in the name of Rav Yochanan that don't tell people. Meaning there's certain halachas which should not be broadcast, it should not be publicized. And the reason why, I would imagine, is like this. Because the distinction between what is a public domain and a private domain is hard to really navigate. And you say to them, well, I know the halacha is, it depends whether it's public or private. I'm not sure if this is public or if this is private. So therefore, the basic ruling should be like this. Stay on the side, caution, error on the side of caution. So Rabbi Yochanan basically told the masses, or I should say told the Rabbanim, right, at the RCA meeting, don't tell people this halacha. I mean, don't publicize it, don't broadcast it, because people in general are not going to know the difference between a public domain and a private domain. And so, you know what, just let it be. Let it be that any questionable case of Tumah is going to be Tameh, period. And then, what Rav Yossi ben Yoazer basically said is, no. Let it be known that there's a difference between Rishos HaYachid versus Rishos HaRabim. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a brisa supporting this as well. Rav Yehuda Amar, Koros Natzlahem Ba'amar, Adkan Rishos HaRabim, Adkan Rishos HaYachid. He actually put in Koros, he put in beams, and he said, this is a Rishos HaRabim, this is a Rishos HaYachid. He also commented to Rav Yana, Amar Lehu, HaMaya, Vishkiyada, Debenahara, Zilotvulu. And the Gemara finishes up. He went in front of Rav Yanai, and he said that if somebody has a questionable case of Tumah in Rishos HaRabim, go into the river and go tovel yourself. Now, somewhat contrary to what we just said, that Safik Tumah Rishos HaRabim is Tahor. Not only did we say that, but we also said that it's acceptable to broadcast it. But still, one should be cautious, one should be careful, right? If it's possible to tovel yourself in the mikvah, go tovel yourself in the mikvah. Okay, and that pretty much ends that discussion. So good. So now we have discussed yesterday the three heterim of Yossi ben Yoezer mentioned in the Mishnah in Adios, and the Gemara now on the third one about coming into contact with the dead body. So now the Gemara has offered two possible pshatim. Pshat number one is chiburin, where after I'm detached from the mace, I'm no longer touching the mace, and someone touches me. So the gzera was he should be tummy for 7 days, as if I were touching the mace. And what Rav Yossi ben Yoezer says is, no, we're going to bring it back to the din d'oraisa of tummy for 1 day. The second possible pshat is that we are going to broadcast what it means, the difference between being in a public domain versus a private domain. Safik Tumah Brishos HaRabim is Tahor, Safik Tumah Brishos HaYachid is Tameh. And what Yossi ben Yoezer says is, go tell the world there's a difference between Rabin versus Yachid. Okay, period. That is the end of that discussion. Okay, now we begin today's Gemara, and today's Gemara is famous. It's Bishul HaKam. All the Bishul HaKam Gemara is coming up on today's daf, and it starts off by quoting the Mishnah. The Mishnah says Shlakos. Right? Cooked food of a non-Jew is going to be prohibited. The Gemara starts off the whole discussion with a very funny question, Menahani Mili, where do I know this from? Meaning, where's the pasuk that shows me this? Immediately Tosfos reacts to the Gemara's question. Because what the Gemara is asking is, where's the Pasuk? Where's the Pasuk? These are Durabanans, these are rabbinic enactments. Why is the Gemara even looking for a Pasuk to teach me about a rabbinic enactment? We have so far covered the discussion about wine, about oil, about bread. We have yet to uncover a pasuk because these are gzera derabbanans. There's not going to be a pasuk that's going to describe them. And the Gemara over here says, Menahani Mili, from where do I know this? What is the Gemara looking for a pasuk to describe it? And just to reinforce the question, the Gemara in just about 10 lines from now is going to say, you're right, it's not a pasuk, it's really gzera derabbanan. So what was the Gemara doing in this exercise of looking for a pasuk? So hold that question. We'll go through the Gemara, and then we're going to come back and we're going to attempt to answer this question. Okay? Menahani Mili, the Gemara says, where do I know this from? Am Rabbi Chiya Barab, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Am Akra, Ocha Bekesef Tashberenim, Vachalti, Umayim Bekesef Titein Li, Visha Sisi. As we were going into Eretz Yisrael, we were passing by the lands of Sichon Melech Og, and we said to Sichon Melech Og, here, do us a small favor. We want to buy from you water and food. Right? Ocha Bekesef Tashberenim, we want to purchase food, the achalti, umayim bekesef titen li, and give us water for money. And so we're just making a simple request of food, and obviously he denies it, and then he goes to war against us, and then we defeat them. But we make a request to buy their food. Now we're going to purchase food prepared by a non-Jew, Sichon and the Amorites. Good. The Gemara darshens kamayim. One of the things that we ask for is water. Why does the Torah spell out water? Water does not change. So too, we're asking for them for raw foods, foods that do not change. The Gemara says, no, what does that mean? Meaning, if let's say they have wheat kernels and they grind it up, well, that changed. Do you mean to tell me that that's asur just because they ground it up? That's not true. Grinding is not an act of cooking. Grinding is okay. So ela kamay, my mind shall nishtana mi bri asa, mafochel shall nishtana mi bri asa. So the Gemara says, water never went through any type of physical change. So too, any other food that never went through any type of physical change. Again, the Gemara says, that's not true. Alami ata, chitim v'tachnan, hachanam v'dasur, v'chitim hachanam v'atan, chitim v'asan klayos, hakimchim v'aslaso shalahem, mutarin. Okay? Even though it went through a physical change, it's going to be mutar. Ela kamayim, so the Gemara concedes, okay, maybe it's like this. Or water goes through no qualitative change when it goes through fire. Heat applied to water doesn't change the water, just makes it hotter. But it's still water, hot water. So to food, a food that doesn't go through a qualitative change through fire, meaning that it can only be food that could have been eaten before the fire, and rather than that, now is eaten even after it's cooked. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, where's the fire in the Pasuk? Like, where's the fire? Go back to the Pasuk, you'll see there's no fire mentioned over there. What kind of drasha is this? The Gemara says, you're right. Ela, now on the top of Lamed Ches Amad Aleph, Ela midirabanan ukra asmachta ba'alma. Correct. It's the Rabbanan, and it's just, the Pasuk is just there as a support, but really this is Xera derabanan. Okay. Now before we go any further in the Gemara, good. Now let's review my question. It's not mine, it's Tosus's. What did we just do? We tried to look for a pasuk to say that Bishul Akum is Asar. Gemara made an attempt. The Gemara says, no, it's not really a pasuk. The Gemara conceded it's an Asmachta, and then the Gemara says it's Midrabanan. And Tosus starts off with this discussion with, of course it's Durabanan. All these things mentioned in the Mishnah are Gzera Durabanan. So Omer Rabbeinu Tam, take a look at the Tosfos now in Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. Important Tosfos in this entire discussion. Demide baye tamud abishlakos v'kasaver midaraisehi. You see that the Gemara is thinking that this is a din daraisa. It ends up rejecting it. But the thought process, this is great, because what Tosfos is teaching us over here is that when the Gemara goes through a certain thought process, the Gemara is not wasting any of our times. The Gemara has something to it. We may not fully understand it, but it has something to it. And Tosfos says, because some of the Raisi Shemagzira Kadmonisi Velo Nigzira Imapas. Tosfos says this is an older Gzera. Right? In other words, the Gemara knows something, that this Gzera of cooked foods is not a bread thing. Bread, as we learned yesterday, that's Shammai and Hillel. Okay, that came at a certain historical point, sometime during the middle of the Second Temple period. Here's what the Gemara knows. Cooked foods, Bishul Akum, it's an older gzera. Bishlakos he in Yanei Tavshel Kedemashma Ba'ach Shmaita Umitchila Gazra Alam Mitam Chasnos. And Tosfos says, maybe it goes like this. Bishul Akum is an old gzera. It came historically earlier. I don't know when, says Tosfos, but earlier. Which is why the Gemara entertained the possibility that it may even be a Din Daraisa. It rejected it, but at least it showed us that's an earlier gzera. Didn't come together with bread. And Tosfos then makes the following assertion. Really, on cooked foods, there's more an issue of chasnas. Intermarriage is more connected with cooked food than it is with bread. Bread is a staple food. Everybody eats bread. Bread is not a social mechanism as much as they sit there and they prepare a cooked piece of food. Bread, on a sliding scale, is not as chasnas oriented as cooked food is. Hillel and Shammai came along and they said, no, bread also. They included bread. But bread was not the first thought about what to prohibit in order to prevent chasnas intermarriage. Cooked foods is more was a more pressing issue. Devarim Gamalapas. The Alpha Gavde Bemasis and Tani Pas Mikamishlokos, and Tosfos says, don't be confused by the Mishnah. Where in the Mishnah, first it mentions bread and then it mentions shlakos. But Tosfos says, so what? And then Tosso says, and good. And now you'll understand another thing. Bread, as we've been discussing a couple days ago, the ban on bread may have been lifted. Right, like we discussed with Rebbe, looking at the bread, wishing that the bread was mutter. The pas palter is permitted, but bishul akum is not permitted. And Tosso says, yeah, now you understand why. Because the bishul akum, that was an earlier gzeira, and that was more directly related to chasnas. Bread, not so much, one of the yudches davar. So bread was lifted, but not bishul akum. Bishul akum was never lifted.
Rambam's the other way.
No. This is.
This is a discussion
of it. Oh, bread was.
Right, and in the bread discussion, the Gemara had a discussion about lifting bread. The Rishonim say that under certain circumstances, you can eat bread that was baked by a non-Jew. You don't need a Jew's involvement in the baking of bread. We discussed how during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, the Shulchan Aruch already has a minhag to try to be careful during those days. But in other words, with bread is more pliable. The gzeira of bread is more pliable. The gzeira of bishul akum, says Tosfos, is an older gzeira and more solidified. May I time at the pasu shlakus? I'm sorry. Lo itir shlakus. May I time at the pasu shlakus? Trei milin inu. Fine. Bread, baking bread and cooking food are two separate things. And then it's great that we get to do this Tosfos today. And then Tosfos goes on to the following discussion. There's something called erev tafshilin, right? Tomorrow we're going to prepare one. Does Erev Tavshilin need to be a cooked food and a baked food? Or is it sufficient for Erev Tavshilin to be just one cooked food? Now you'll know, as Tosfos writes in the last words in this Tosfos, we do both, but Tosfos, except for Rabbeinu Tam, Tosfos, the Bali HaTosfos, were very strong of the opinion, doesn't have to be both. It could be just a cooked food. But based on what we just learned, Rabbeinu Tam says it's got to be both. Because what do you see over here? That baking and cooking are two separate acts. You see that over here because they are two separate gzeiras. And so therefore, if you want to go into Yontif with the ability to cook for Shabbos, you have to, before Yontif, bake and cook. Right? So, watch Tosos make the leap from one issue to the next issue. Lo itir shlokos me'at time. The pasu shlokos trei milin inu. The Omer Rabbeinu Tam nami tetzarech la'ariv eruv tavshilin bepasu shlokos. And Rabbeinu Tam says, and yes, and when you then make your erev tavshilin, you got to do both, cook and bake. Or maybe right medamrin beperek beis the beitza. Now let's skip a little bit over these next parts because he's going to bring proofs from Gemara and Beitza, and skip a couple lines. The chen perish bahag. Right, and the Bahag agrees with Rabbeinu Tam, it's got to be cooked and a baked food, which is our minhag, by the way. Tomorrow, when we prepare our Erev Tavshilin, we're going to set aside a matzah, we're going to set aside a hard-boiled egg. It doesn't have to be those foods, but that's the minhag, right? And the matzah obviously represents a baked food, the egg represents a cooked food, and that is al pi minhag Rabbeinu Tam, and Rabbeinu Tam and Tosos makes the leap. You see that over here because Shlokos and Pas Akum are two separate gzeiras. So you see they're two separate things. Achein Ri Omer, just a little bit further here in this Tosfos, the Ri vehemently disagrees. The Be'eriv Tavshilin Sagiv. Now, just be careful because I'm not sure what part exactly he's disagreeing with. Achein Ri Omer, the Be'eriv Tavshilin Sagiv Echad, O Be'pas, O Be'tavshil. V'leis Hilchasa Ke'ahidah Rav Elazar D'Shamutihi. The Gemara in Beitza, he says, that's Rav Elazar's opinion, and we know Rav Elazar is a Shamuti, right, a Talmud of Shammai, castigated, okay, not for now. But the Ri says that when it comes to Erev Tavshilin, it doesn't have to be cooked and baked, it could be one food, and either one is fine. Either cooked or baked, either one of them is fine. V'gam olech b'shitas chananya libet de beisham de b'ipas v'tavshil v'cham en temun en beithol amatirnu v'yushami de beitza palig Rav Yeshua behej alem, and then he quotes the Yerushalmi, which right now I would like to just skip over. And then at the end of the Tosfos, Miu, the last two lines of Tosfos, Ha'olam nagu la'arev b'pas v'tavshil hol v'yatza davar mipi alachus gedolos v'rabbeinu tam. Right? Even though Tosfos says, I really don't agree, I really think that for Erev Tavshilin, you just need one or the other, either cooked food or baked food. But Rabbeinu Tam said it, and there's a tremendous amount of respect and deference to the position of Rabbeinu Tam. But over here, it's just interesting, this Erev Tashil discussion of a cooked and baked food really is a takeoff of the double gzeira of Bishul Akum and Pasakum, which Tosos clearly here is separating into two historical events. Okay.
What is Rambam's position?
About what? Oh, how to do Eruv Tavshilin?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Okay. Yes, Aaron.
Was the Ri chronologically a little bit after Rabbeinu
Tam? Yes. Rabbeinu Tam is a grandson. And the Ri is a later generation. I don't know the genealogy well enough, but the Rabbeinu Tam is an earlier one. He was a grandson of Rashi. So, yes.
French families.
Okay. Good. All right, now let's continue in the Gemara. Al Kras Machta Be'ama, who it's an Isidur Abanan. Next big discussion over here in terms of Bishul Akum. Look at Rashi, the first Rashi on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. And Rashi writes the following. It's a Gzera de Rabbanan. Look what Rashi writes. Shelo ye Yisrael ragel atzlo b'machu v'mishta v'yachilenu davar tamei. Rashi says, do you know why the rabbis made a Gzera of Bishul Akum? Here's why. A non-Jew is going to cook for you. He doesn't know about kashrus. He doesn't have to know about kashrus. He doesn't have to keep kosher. He's a non-Jew. And what's going to end up happening is that to enhance the flavor of the food, he's going to add in ma'achal ha-masurim, non-kosher food. Not because he's bad, not just simply because he's not wiser. He doesn't know. Yeah, that's where
he's not going to keep a taris.
No. Rashi's talking about ma'achal ha-masurim. Okay. And he's going to add non-kosher food to the mixture. Rashi over here writes that the reason of Bishul Akum has to do with the fact that he's going to add non-kosher food in. Okay. Tosos says, I don't agree. Okay? Now you already know Tosos is going to say that because we just did Tosos on the previous page. And Tosos on the previous says this is all about chas, it's all about intermarriage. Tosos, however, is also going to point out that if you read Rashi back on the Mishnah, Rashi back in the Mishnah also said chasnos. So it is a little bit strange that Rashi over here is introducing a new reason behind it of ma'achalos sasuros. Okay, so but still look at the top Tosfos on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. He writes, Perish Rashi, the Rabbanan Gazor Mishum Dechai Shami Yachalim Dvarim Tameim V'yoser Hayanir Lafarish Atah Mishum Chasnos. I think this is more about intermarriage than it is about him adding non-kosher food. And if you go back to Rashi in the Mishnah, that's exactly what Rashi says in the Mishnah. Okay, good. I checked it up, by the way. It's Tosus is correct. Omer Harav Rabbeinu Avraham Barab David. And then he quotes the Ravid. Now, this is not the Ravid, Rambam Ravid. This is one of the Balei HaTosfos, right? Rav Avraham ben Rav David. And he gives the following heter. He says, this Isser of Bishul Akum is only when they're cooking out of their own home, out of the non-Jewish home. He writes, however, if they're cooking in your house, so then it's okay. This is the opinion of the Rav Avraham mentioned here in Tosfos. And he believes, he's of the opinion that there's neither concern, neither the Rashi concern of Shema Yachalem Dvarim Tameim, nor the concern of Chasnas, if they're cooking in your own home. V'lo Hodolo Rabbeinu Tam, again, this is also a point of major a major dispute. Rabbeinu Tam says no. The Vada Kevin Shalovei Kochavim Avasha Lo Chalku Klal Chachamim Bein Rishos Yisrael Rishos Haovei Kochavim. We never find this distinction in the Gemara that there's a difference where they cook it, whether they're cooking in their house, whether they're cooking in your house. Kila Olam Yeshlachu Shema Lo Yizayir Gam Beveso She Yisrael Kama Beveso Shalovei Kochavim. As much as we're worried about where if they cook in their own home, we're worried about their cooking in your home as well. Okay, this opinion of Rav Avraham is not accepted la halacha, but it's out there. In other words, it's clearly an opinion that Tosfos here writes, but Rabbeinu Tam strongly disagrees to this position of Rabbeinu Avraham. Okay, so we have this gzera of Bishul Akum. So we talked about two big issues right now. One big issue we spoke about is historically when it came about, and Tosfos is of the strong opinion that this was an earlier gzera, a stronger gzera, and it's more chasnas oriented. And then the second issue is why didn't they make such a gzera? And two positions, Rashi and Tosfos, with a possible nafkamina, although Tosfos himself rejects it out of hand.
Isn't it possible that in the Beis Yisrael he can control the Beis Yisrael?
That's what Rav Avraham is thinking. The Rav Avraham and the Balei HaTosfos is thinking that. Rabbi Tam says no, he doesn't agree.
Apparently the idea of Hashkocha didn't...
This is a gzera. This is an actual formal gzera that if they cook it, it's going to be ulcer. And Rabbeinu Tam is telling us it doesn't matter. Even if you're watching them cook it, it doesn't matter. It's still going to be ulcer. It's a gzera derabanan.
Would you agree if you were looking stove?
Wait, hold it. Whoa. early. No. It's early for that question. But that question will come up. We'll get to it. Lam top of the line on Lam Ches Amad Aleph Amar of Shmuel Barav Yitzchak Amar Rav Kol Anechel Kamo Shu Chayim Bo Mishum Bishulei Ov De Kochavim. Heter number one of the Gemara. The Gemara is going to come up with two major heterim. Heter number one is that if the food could have been eaten raw, and so therefore by cooking it certainly enhances it, but he didn't make it edible, so that's not Bishul Akam. So if he takes a apple and he bakes an apple or he cooks an apple, apple's fine. Okay, because the apple could have been eaten beforehand
in the Jew's house.
Doesn't matter where. Doesn't matter where. Right, that difference of whose house it is. That's one opinion in Tosfos, which Rabbeinu Tam says is not correct. But heter number one is nechal kamo shu chai. Heter number two, b'sura masnu hachi b'pamudisa masnu hachi amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak amar Rav kol sheino nechal al shulchan malachim alafes bo sapas ein bo mishum bishulei. If it's something that does not go on a king's table, if it is a very simple food eaten by simple people, so then there is no iser of Bishul Akam. This second heter sounds like chasnas more than anything else, right? In other words, on the Rashi Tosos front of why it's usur, if Rashi's correct that we're worried about Treif, what difference does it make whether it goes on the king's table, whether it doesn't go on the king's table? This sounds like chasnas. This sounds like, oh, it's a special food that will lead to intermarriage, right? How can you make such a distinction if Rashi's correct that this is ma'achalos asuras issue? Okay, I'm raising that as an issue, right? It's discussed, the Achronim discuss it, but just to be aware that that's certainly something to always think about, the Rashi Tosos reasonings. So my Beinah, the Gemara says now, of the two Atarim that are given to us, the Gemara says there's going to be an Afkamina. Igemino, Dagim Ketanim, Va'ardi V'daisei. Herring. I call it herring. I don't know if the Gemara is really talking about herring, but Dagim Ketanim, small fish.
The Aramaic is translated to
schnauzer. Matcha is herring. Correct.
Right.
I agree. Rashi writes they ain't right. Dagim ketanim v'ardi v'daisi ain't achalim chayim ve'ain olam al shulchan malachim. So they're not eaten raw. You gotta cook them a little bit, but they don't. The king doesn't eat them. King doesn't eat a herring. That's what I raised. In other words, right? This Rashi issue of non-kosher. Correct.
The Tanaim came up.
No, because you see the food in front of you. In other words,
if the guy cooked it for you, you could have certainly used
The Gzeira Derabanan applies even if you're watching the whole thing. You see the whole cooking done right in front of you. You know nothing is added to it. Still, you can't eat it.
No, but I mean, this is saying that. But the thing is that you don't have to be washing it. If a goy cooks an omelet, according to this heter, you can eat it.
According to the second heter, assuming it doesn't go on the yes,
the king's
that's correct.
Table.
And assuming it doesn't go on the king's table.
In the meantime, he could have used pork oil, whatever.
Right? So now you're going back to Rashi. That's exactly what Rashi says. Rashi says, "I'm worried about that."
I know. I'm saying why are the Tanaim not concerned about it? Why did they give this heter? I mean, why didn't they think of that? Why is Russia thinking of this? Like, why wasn't this issue raised by them and they came with a heter?
Because again, I go back to this my first point. Because this gzera derabanan would apply even if you know everything that went in. But you watch the whole cooking process. You know nothing non kosher went in. Still, this is gzera derabanan. You can't eat it. All right, let's move on. Okay, Amrav Asi, Amrav Dagim Ketanim Meluchim Ein by Mishum Bishulei Ov DeKochavim. Salted fish, right? Some certain fish were so soft, but just a little bit of salting and they're ready to eat. So salted fish, that's not a problem. Bishul Akam. Salting is not cooking. Okay? So it has to be actual cooking. Rav Yosef im Salam, if a non-Jew were to cook the, it were to roast the salted fish, you could use it for Erev Tavshilin. Right? It's funny, because it's once it's salted, it's edible, which means now that it's no longer under the gzera of Bishalakam, and then he roasts it, and now, good, now you could use it for your Erev Tavshilin. That would be fine. Because now you have a roasted food for Erev Tavshilin. Okay? It, however, we go to our Kasa Daharsana, that no. Now, Kasa Daharsana, we go back to our Murias that we talked about the last couple days. Fish guts, fish oil, the fats that are protruding from the fish. Back then, that was an unbelievable delicacy. Doesn't sound appealing to me. I wouldn't try it. And it was fried with flour. And the Gemara says that's Bishul Akum. Now, the reason why is very simple. Because it's fried with flour. Flour is not edible until after you fry it. And the Gemara points out over here that I would have thought that the fish oils is the ikker, which, and the fish oils are edible even before they're being fried. No, the flour is the ikker. And so therefore, flour fried with the fish oils, because of flour content, and because the flour is not edible beforehand, so therefore it is Bishul Akum. Right, correct.
And the Gemara says, doesn't mean that it's of such
it just simply means, in other words, it's considered cooked. It's on one hand, in other words, the Gemara just loves the irony that it's not subject to Bishul Akum, and it's cooked so that it can be used for Erev Tavshilin. The Gemara is obviously fascinated with that irony. Amar Abrona Amarav Ovikocham Sheitzus is Ora Ba'agam Kolach Agav Mishba Agam Asurim. Okay, great case. You light a field on fire, you're right, it's done, you want to expose the field. So you want to get rid of all the brush and all the schmutz in the field, so you light it on fire, fine. And in the process of lighting the field on fire, there are grasshoppers running through the field. And now you have barbecued grasshoppers. And it's a great question. Can I eat the grasshoppers that were cooked by the non-Jew? Now, he had no intention whatsoever of cooking the grasshopper. That wasn't his kavanah at all. His kavanah was to just simply clear the field. So over here, the Gemara says, go ahead, eat the grasshoppers. Go through the field and help yourself to the most unbelievable grilled grasshopper out there. Now, hechi dami. E lema de lo yada haitar vaitame ma iria vikochama fi yisra'an nami. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry. I made a mistake. Kol ha'chagavim sheba'agam asurim. Sorry. The Brisa's recording, it's not a Brisa. Rav says that all the grasshoppers are prohibited. Sorry. Now, okay, the reason why I thought what I thought is because of how the Gemara is going to go. Hechidami, ilem edolo yadai tarvai tamay ma'yuriyo v'kocham afi'i so'anami. What's the issue? You don't know how to separate, distinguish between the kosher and non-kosher because they're roasted now. And I can't tell. In other words, there are certain simonim, there are certain size of identifying what is a kosher grasshopper versus non-kosher. And I don't know now because they're roasted. So the Gemara says, oh, you know what the issue is? The issue is Bishul Akum. Gemara says, no. There's no Bishul Akum issue over here. Ki agavna mi asav amar av chana bar ami amar av pedas amar av yochanan hay ovi kochavim decharach resha shar lamecha minei afilim resh une. If there is no intent to cook, so then there's no isser of Bishul Akum. Okay? Now it's funny, in other areas of halacha, right, when we say davar sheino miskaven, oh, I didn't intend to do it. But if you did it, we generally say, okay, what difference does intent make? In the world of Bishul Akum, if you didn't intend to cook it, it's not Bishul Akum, even though the result is cooking. Gemara gives the following example. After an animal was shechted, so they singed the outer part of the animal in order to remove the hair. Okay? Here, let's say the singeing was done by a non-Jew. Okay, so he goes around with a blowtorch, but obviously not. However the process is of singeing, he went around and he singed the external part of the animal so that the hair is to be removed. And then there happens to be, through that singeing process, part of the animal that's edible. The Gemara here gives the example of the earlobe. Does not sound tasty to me, but again, this is my personal taste preferences should not play a role in what the halacha is. And so therefore the Gemara says you can eat the part of the animal that ended up being cooked. Because his intention was not to cook the animal, just to remove the hair, so if something ended up getting cooked, that's fine.
Because he was in the process.
He wasn't intending to cook it. So too, when we go to our clearing of the field, if his intention is not to barbecue the grasshoppers are fine. So the Gemara says, you're right. Right? And this is why I thought earlier what I did. If his intention is not to barbecue the grasshoppers, they're fine. There's no prohibition of Bishul Akum. And again, if I go back to the Rashi Tosfos discussion, Tosfos sounds a lot better over here. If the issue is chasnus, if it's an intermarriage issue, then you understand that if his intention is not to cook it, he was doing something else, and whatever he was doing by process ended up cooking, that's not going to lead to intermarriage.
So we know which ones are kosher, though, right?
So la'olam deloyada haitar v'haitame. And the reason why the ruling came out that you shouldn't eat the grasshoppers is because you don't know which one's kosher, non-kosher. And it just happened to have been that the question that Rav was fielding was that it was a non-Jew that burned the field. But in that regard, it doesn't make a difference who burned the field. Okay. Gufa. Amar of Chanan bar Ami, Amar of Yochanan, Hayo v'kocham dechar freshe esher lamechel mina afilamesh une. If a non-Jew was singeing the external part of the animal just to remove the hair, you can eat the part of the animal that ended up being cooked because he wasn't intending to cook it. Amar avina hochacha uvekocham deshar sichta lasuna v'kavra by Yisrael kara meikara shapir dami. Gemara says, let's give another example of this unintentional cooking. Let's say you took a kara. What's it called? No. Kara is a hard vegetable. It's like radish.
Potato or
whatever. Okay, whatever. It's a hard vegetable. And you can't eat it raw. And what you do is you put it in an oven. And then a non-Jew comes along, not knowing that there's a radish inside, and he heats up the oven. Right? The Gemara here explains that, describes that he is sichta la'asuna, wet wood, and he wants to dry the wood. So he heats up the oven. And in the process, he ends up cooking your kara. Kara's not radish. Kara is a gourd. Thank you. Okay. So, and he ends up cooking your gourd. Shapir dami, it's fine. Because he didn't intend to cook it. So pshita ma'od detem lebeshule manika mechavin kamash malan lesherure manika mechavin. So the Gemara says, yeah, correct. And as a havamina, I would have thought that maybe that's also what he's doing is also considered an act of cooking, even though he had no idea that your gourd is inside. And so kamash malan, that it's not an act of cooking. He didn't know your gourd was inside. Again, the same point the Gemara is reiterating is that unintentional cooking is not a problem of Bishul Akum. It has to be that he knows that he's doing an act of cooking food. Right. But again, this is now, once you come back to the idea that this is chasnas, you understand how we can make such a distinction. Let's say you're cooking food on the fire, you're roasting meat. And along comes a non-Jew. Now you started the process already. You already threw the meat on the fire. He comes and he flips it over. So the Gemara says, that's fine. So the Gemara says, now what was it? What was the result of him flipping it? You want to tell me that if he didn't flip it, it wouldn't have cooked? So the Gemara says, I don't understand. So then why would it be okay? So the Gemara says, Amai Mutter. Bishul shavde kochavim ninu. Lo tzricha di ilo hafach hava bashal betarte shai v'hashtaka bashal bechada shaita. Gemara says like this. If you would have left it on the fire, it would have cooked in 2 hours. By him turning it over, it now cooks in 1 hour. Okay, I understand now. And in addition, by the way, it's going to be evenly cooked. But okay, that's a barbecuing issue. But it'll be cooked in shorter time. The fact that he hastened, that he expedited the cooking process, you might have thought that that's significant. The chiddush of the Gemara is it's not significant. The mere fact that what you did would have resulted in the object being cooked. he just quickened it, he expedited, that's not a concern, says the Gemara. So the Gemara says, we go back to our shear of Michael ben Jerusai. Food that is partially cooked, but cooked enough so that it becomes edible. Our friendly thief, Maya, right, ben Jerusai, who is always on the run and never can sit down and enjoy himself a full cooked meal. His profession, it's a hazard, it's a professional hazard of being a thief. You got to always be on the run. And so he has his food cooked either to one third or one half of what it would normally take the time to cook it, Machlokas Rishonim. But as long as it's cooked to Michael ben Jerusai, so Ein Bo Mishum Bishul Akum. But once it's cooked to Michael ben Jerusai, I'm sorry, if it's not yet cooked to Michael ben Jerusai, so then it's Bishul Akum. If it is cooked to Michael ben Jerusai, so then there's no problem with Bishul Akum. So the Gemara says, Hasam Kigon to Usve Besilta Bishakle. There, here's what happened. The meat was put on the fire. It didn't reach the point of Michael ben Jerusai. Sorry, a Jew put it on the fire. It didn't reach the point of Michael ben Jerusai. It was taken off the fire, and then the non-Jew put it back on again. That's an issue. But if you put it on the fire, and it wasn't taken off the fire, even though the non-Jew handled it, and even though he expedited the cooking process, that's fine. That's fine. Because it's because even without him, it would have been cooked. It's a machlokas Rambam Rashi, whether it's a third or a half.
So as long as it's reached that stage, and the non-Jew touches it, that's fine.
It's fine, right? Besilta v'shakla v'kocham v'usve b'tanura. Okay, tanya nami hachi. And here we have a brayse that's totally supporting this pshat. Minich yisrael baso agabi gacham uvav v'kocham v'mahafich bo. Ashivu yisrael mi beis hakneset, so mi beis hamedrash v'eino choshesh. If a Jew puts food on the fire, meat on the fire, and the non-Jew comes and he flips it over, I got to run to shul. It's totally fine. The food is totally fine. Shafesus isha kedera gabe kira uva over his kochavim umegisa ad shetavu mibeis hamerchos mibeis hakneses ve'eino chosheshes. A Jewish woman puts a pot on the fire, and she says to her non-Jewish help, "Do me a favor here. Just stir it. I got to go to shul." Fine. So the Gemara says she'll go to shul. She'll come back, and it's fine. As long as you started the process, even though it didn't get to Michael ben Jerusai, it's fine. Okay, now the Gemara asks the following question. Let's say a non-Jew started the cooking process. Up until this point in the Gemara, we have been dealing with the scenario where the Jew started the cooking process, which, even though the non-Jew helped, accelerated, it's fine. Okay? Even if the food hasn't gone to Michael ben Jerusai, it's fine. Let's go the other direction. Let's say that the non-Jew started the cooking process. What kind of intervention do you need to do in order so that it's not Bishul Akum? So the Gemara over here employs the following argument. Gamru biyad ovei kochavim mutar. Gamru biyad Yisrael lo kol shekein. If a non-Jew finishes the process, it's mutter. If a Jew finishes the process, lo kol shekein. Now, if you spend time thinking about this kal v'chomer, and you really apply yourself, you realize the kal v'chomer has got some holes in it. Meaning, in the case of a non-Jew finishing it, even if he wouldn't have done anything, it would have been cooked. Here, without your intervention, it would have been a food cooked by a non-Jew. So the kal v'chomer, right, it's not as tight and as locked as the Gemara over here presents it. Okay, you just need to spend some time working through how this kal v'chomer works exactly. It marnami, but lumdus aside, this is the Gemara says this is an accepted halacha. It marnami amar abba barbachanam rav yochanan v'amila amar abacha barbachanam rav yochanan. Bein shinecho v'kocham v'hafach Yisrael. Bein shinecho Yisrael v'hafacho v'kochavim. Mutter ve'inu aser ashe tehe tchilaso v'gamro biyad o v'kochavim. In order for it to be considered Bishul Akum, he had to have started the cooking process and finished the cooking process. Then and only then is the Bishul Akum. There is a question brought down in the Rishonim. What if he cooked it to Michael ben Jerusai? Right? What if the non-Jew cooked it and brought it all the way to Michael ben Jerusai? and then only after that you intervened. Is your intervention after Michael ben Drusai going to remove Bishul Akum? Okay. From the simple reading of the Gemara, it sounds like it's okay. But in terms of lamdus, if you think about it,
it's already cooked.
Michael ben Drusai, we've said on the previous Amud, is a point of cooked. Okay, so obviously there's something for consideration, a little bit beyond the scope of our daf. It doesn't. I understand. Rabbi Goldstein's a good point, but we said we established on the previous Amud that's cooked. Hilchasa. Okay. Okay. Oh, good. We're going to stop over here. All right. Tomorrow we're going to talk about what happens in every restaurant, and that is that the Jew lights the fire, and then he does all the cooking. And how does that work? And what's that based on? And it's based on the upcoming Gemara, which will begin tomorrow. Okay, we'll stop the Gemara over here, say Kaddish, and then talk a little bit about Yontif.